This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Have you ever dealt with a person that's held onto a grudge where you can ask them about it, but they can't even remember why they're mad? Psychiatrist and chief medical officer at Haven, Michael McGee, is going to help break down exactly what is a grudge and why people hold onto them. Thanks for joining me, Dr. McGee.
It's a pleasure.
To start off, could you explain to me, what is a grudge?
A grudge is pretty much the same as a resentment. It's where you ruminate negatively on a wrong that's been done to you by somebody in the past, and you generally have a hard time letting go of them. They tend to sort of live with you and contaminate your experience of life.
Why would people, knowing that it's such a negative aspect of like a state of mind, why would people want to hold on to a grudge?
Yeah, I don't think people hold on to grudges voluntarily. I think that there is a neurobiological sort of evolutionary history to the development of grudges as a way of warning us about people that maybe who have been hurtful to us to avoid them going forward. So I think it's something that we just neurobiologically have evolved to do over time. And even though they're painful, they poison our experience of life. People find themselves compulsively ruminating on harms that have been done to them anyway.
The reason I bring up grudges is because you actually see it a lot in the news. And one newsworthy ones is there's a YouTuber, his name was Total Biscuit, and he was battling cancer for a few years, and he finally succumbed to it, and he passed away this past May. And after his death was announced by his now widow, there was a developer of video games said, thank God he's dead. And this came because Total Biscuit, being a reviewer of video games, criticized one of the games that this developer had made. This game is a few years old now, so this guy really held on to this grudge, even up to the YouTuber's death. When it comes down to it, that kind of grudge, would you even call it a grudge anymore?
Yeah, I would call that a grudge for sure.
How would you let something go? I mean, obviously, this guy, he just wouldn't let it go. Is there something else that's underlining here?
Clearly, he was taking the criticism very personally as a threat to his value, perhaps his self-worth, perhaps his livelihood. And so in some way, he felt his well-being or existence was somehow being assaulted. And again, that's just a very primitive reaction to the experience of being attacked, which is how he experienced the criticism of his video game. By holding on to that grudge and that negativity, it really poisons the person who's holding the grudge. They have a saying that hatred destroys the hater, and it's really true. I mean, the more time that you spend, getting even is less time that you're spending getting ahead. In this case, this person, this video game developer, really missed an incredible opportunity to maybe take a look back and look at the criticism, and maybe instead of taking it so personally, ask, well, I wonder whether there could have been any kind of seed of truth in this, and maybe possibly use it as an opportunity to grow. I'm sensing out of his own lack of humility, and again, taking this intensely personally, he spoiled a tremendous opportunity, perhaps for learning and growth, by turning it into a grudge.
Yeah, it does sound pretty petty. He could have, you're right, taken an opportunity to really grow and maybe learn from the criticism. There are other types of grudges. Also, in the news, like just this morning, I was looking on Daily Mail, and there was an obituary for a woman who had passed away. It was put up by her two children. Long story short, the mom abandoned them, and they're upset. Put up an obituary for her and said that they were raised by her parents in Clements, and she passed away May 31st of 2017, and she will not be missed by her children, and they understand the world is a better place without her. That was pretty harsh coming from her own children. That kind of, is that a grudge too?
I think that some of our greatest grudges come in the context of our family relationships, where what our family members can do or not do to us or for us can really be very, very painful. That definitely is a very sad sad situation. In that situation, those children, you know, for the rest of their lives will never, unless they resolve this somehow, will never have any kind of peace. There's always going to be harboring an unhealed pain. I think grudges represent a pain which has not been attended to and which has not been healed. And it's sad because if you can let go of a grudge and if you can get to the place of forgiveness, it really is a gift that you give to yourself. It can really restore a sense of peace and positivity and clarity. And that makes me feel very, very sad for those two people who wrote that obituary.
It's actually really easy to sit there and say, forgive, forget, you're going to feel better afterwards. But what are the actual steps that you need to go through if you know a grudge is petty, I need to grow from this?
I think if forgiveness is a spiritual act, or actually is a spiritual occurrence, which is not voluntary, I don't think we can involuntarily forgive other people. It's not something that you can just decide to do. The brain doesn't work that way. People are going to still have the underlying pain and hurt, which is going to involuntarily drive those feelings of resentment and hatred and bitterness. So forgiveness is something that we cultivate through a number of behaviors, both mental behaviors as well as actual behaviors, that actually then cultivate the conditions for forgiveness to arise. There's several that I recommend as a practice, and these are not a one-time thing. These are things that people need to practice on a daily basis, really throughout their lives, because multiple opportunities for the need for forgiveness are going to arise as we go through our lives. And the first thing that I recommend is to imagine the person that you resent as a child and see that they were once innocent and reflect on the fact that nobody chooses their genes, nobody chooses their character, nobody chooses their parents, and really nobody chooses the environment in which they grow up. And if you see that very clearly, you can see that if you were that person, you might well have acted exactly as they did. That's really very humbling, and it really invites some compassion. And the second thing is, I think it's helpful for us to humbly reflect on the harm that we've done to others, to see that we all have an ego, and we all can be selfish, and we all can be hurtful, and that nobody is a perfect saint. Very few people, very, very rare that somebody is perfectly saintly in all their behavior. And none of us is invulnerable from harming others, either intentionally or unintentionally. The second thing is, I would consider, if somebody's been hurtful to you, contemplate the role of their ignorance, maybe their disease, their pain, their suffering, or their situation in their actions. I think if you understand the forces that drive people to act the way that they do, then that can also promote compassion.
I know I'm guilty of it. I hold grudges. I think my pettiest grudge is my sister's husband. Before, when they were just dating, he asked my sister, hey, can I just take one of your sister's video games? And she said, no, we don't, you know, I don't take her stuff. And he's like, why not? She's the younger sister. You can take whatever you want. That stuck with me. And it stuck with me. I couldn't help it. Like, you know, like, oh, so that's how it is. And they were dating and been together, I think, of total 8 years now. And this is when they were first starting to go out. So it still resonates with me now. I don't think I forgave, but I did let it pass. Or did I forgive? I mean, is there a difference between letting it go and forgiving?
I think letting go is a good practice to sort of say, okay, I'm just going to let that go. That does invite forgiveness. I think in this case, he was being pretty disregarding of your rights in terms of you being the owner of that video game. One of the things that can sometimes invite forgiveness is that if you can go to a person and say, hey, what were you thinking? Help me understand. You know, that really felt like a violation of my rights. Can you help me to understand what it is you were thinking and what made you say that? And sometimes, you know, going to somebody and saying, help me understand, rather than saying, you jerk, why did you do that? But instead using that help me understand can invite a dialogue. And then if you get the opportunity, you don't always have this opportunity, but if you can get to the opportunity and say, hey, you know, that really felt like a violation. That was really upsetting for me. That can then give the perpetrator, if you will, a chance to sort of, a gift really of an opportunity to respond to the hurt. I don't know if that's something you've thought about doing with your sister's husband.
Nah, I just let it, that's just the way he is. I don't know how to explain it, but it is what it is. He's not my husband.
A lot of our resentments arise from unrealistic expectations. So there's a saying that expectations are resentments under construction. And we expect people to be kind and considerate and ethical. And And that's just not the reality of things. Other people can be hurtful and disregarding, and see that we can all be hurtful and disregarding. When we expect reality to be other than what it is, we're really picking a fight with reality. So it's very, very helpful, like in this situation, oh, that's just the way he is. Well, accepting him the way he is, that sort of lets that resentment pass away. And what you're doing in accepting things exactly as they are, sort of honoring what is. Now, at the same time, that doesn't mean that you're going to say that, you know, it's okay to just take my stuff whenever you want to. It's important to be able to also, you know, assert ourselves. And as we go into the world with love in our hearts, we also need to carry a shield. You know, I think paradoxically, you know, when we forgive others and accept them for exactly who they are, it actually, ironically, it empowers us to take positive actions with a positive heart to sort of protect ourselves and make things better. It's not that forgiving him is acquiescing to his bad behavior, but it does empower you to be more loving by letting it go, puts you in a better situation to address destructiveness or injustice. If you assert yourself with more of a loving heart, I think people resonate with that. And rather than responding in a negative way to negativity and resentment and bitterness, if you do accept but then assert yourself and say, hey, this is the way things need to be, I need things to be this way, people will respond more positively to your positive energy, if that makes sense.
It does. I'm a little curious, though. If you decided to go up to someone who you have a, you know, a little grudge against, and you say, hey, you really hurt my feelings, and this is the reason, and they're completely dismissive of you, how do you, I guess, let that go? Do you just sit there and say, well, I guess there's going to be a grudge? Or you sit there and say, oh, well, at least I tried and I aired it out?
First of all, I wouldn't go to somebody and say, you really hurt my feelings. I'd go to somebody and say, hey, can I talk to you about something that happened that was upsetting for me? And really own that they didn't hurt your feelings. Your feelings were hurt by what they did. But we all need to really own that our emotions, our reactions to what happens in the world are really our reactions. And people don't make us feel a certain way. We respond in a certain way. And if we can own that so that we're not using the you word and pointing our finger, when you use the you word, you're pointing your finger. To say, hey, I wanted to share it with you that I really reacted with a lot of hurt to what you did. And then I really do like that. Help me understand. I just would like to understand what was going on for you when you did that. I'd like to understand what that was about for you. That invites conversation. When we go to people and confront them, everybody's human natural response is to be defensive. And what we want to do is invite sort of a sharing and mutual understanding. If you do it in that way, you're getting a better chance of really coming to some sort of mutual understanding without recrimination or blame. And then, you know, they may or may not respond by acknowledging what they did. If they don't respond, then you know something about them. You know, this is not a person who I am capable of having intimacy with, true intimacy, because this is not a person where we can both see each other and be seen by each other and be appreciated and acknowledged and validated for each of our understandings and feelings. And then that tells you something about putting up boundaries. See, I think love requires boundaries, and it requires differing boundaries with differing people. To love somebody, for example, who's a murderer, you really need that boundary of having them be behind bars in order to experience the capacity for goodwill toward them. But I think that spiritually we have a mandate to love everybody for our own benefit and for the benefit of the world. So in that situation, if somebody doesn't respond to your attempts to have sort of an authentic exchange, then you know that that's somebody that you want to put up some boundaries with to protect yourself going forward.
What do you do when you're the one being confronted? I thought of my mother a while ago. I don't know what she was talking about, and maybe that was my fault. I should have been paying attention. I responded with, what are you talking about? Like, what's going on? What are you talking about? Oh, my God. I mean, if looks could kill, she was so mad by me saying that.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like, that really hurt my feelings. Like, she came back like days later to talk about this. She's like, this hurt my feelings. And she felt really upset that I was completely dismissive of whatever we were talking about. I did get defensive. What should have been the more appropriate reaction to it rather than just being defensive?
Boy, that's such a great question. And I got to tell you, I really admire you so much for asking that question. If everybody in the world were to ask that kind of question, think what a better world we would be in. You know, for me, the first thing is to realize that, you know, I'm going to be hurtful to to other people, largely unintentionally, largely because I may be driven by my own personal selfish needs in a way that can lead me to be disregarding of others. So I think the first thing is humility. It's okay that I'm an imperfect person who can be hurtful to others. And the second thing is sort of impersonality. Realize that, you know, this person is hurt, and rather than making this about me and whether I'm good or bad, let me just stop for a minute and just focus out of my care and concern for this person with their experience. And again, I think the question, help me understand, is so important. So Mom, help me understand, what did I say and do, and how did you react? And then to respond with empathy. I think what people need most when they express their pain is to know that we understand. And so it would have been so good for you to have said, you know, Mom, I really understand that when I did A, you felt B, and that you would have preferred that I did C. And if you had just responded in that kind of empathic way, out of a sense of safety and okay with your being an imperfect person who could potentially maybe do things that would be disappointing or hurtful to others, that would have probably resulted in such a better outcome for the two of you, don't you think?
Probably. I don't say, what are you talking about anymore, to my mother. I can guarantee you that.
That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's her trigger. I don't know what started it, but don't say that to my mother. She goes off the rails. Because I know earlier we spoke about the obituary. Obviously, this woman passed away when she was 80, so she wasn't a young woman. Her children lived their whole life holding this grudge. Do grudges impact your life or no? Like, this is just something that's between, obviously, the children and the mother, and it wouldn't, you know, bleed into any other relationships.
Having a positive outlook on life, having gratitude, having a sense of presence and sort of reverent acceptance for the way things are, that those all promote happiness and longevity. And there's even some literature to show that that kind of positive attitude reduces risk of rates of dementia, for example. So, you know, people who are in the grips of negativity and bitterness, I think it really poisons their quality of their experience of life. We've all been given this precious gift of existence and have the opportunity. I see our purpose in life is really to be able to nurture this gift of life and to savor this gift of life. And when you're poisoned by grudges like that, it's going to have a pervasive negative impact on all of your life experiences. And so I feel very, very sad for those two people that they were not able to come to a place of forgiveness. And the other thing is really the forgiveness is healing also of the underlying pain. Because when you go through that forgiveness process, you're dealing directly with the pain, for example, their pain of being abandoned by their own mother. That's a terrible pain. And coming to a place of healing of that pain, of coming to a place of understanding and compassion and forgiveness, if they had been able to do that for their mother, it would have really healed that pain for themselves. That really is what's most saddest about this, is that they have had to live their lives with that terrible pain.
When you think about it, you need to forgive just so that you can live a happy life then.
You need to practice cultivating the conditions for forgiveness to arise in order to have a truly happy and peaceful life. That's really true.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. McGee, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
People can find out about me at my website, which is Dr. Michael McGee, MichaelMcGee, drmichaelmcgee.com. And my book on a biological to spiritual approach towards recovery from addiction is called The Joy of Recovery at thejoyofrecovery.com.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.